Hello, everyone. I'm Kevin Winder, and thanks for tuning in to another podcast of Beyond Everything Radio. And as always, I have a question for you. Are you curious about finding your true love? Do you believe they even exist? If so, how would you expect to find them? Are we to just act like the world around us and then somehow expect something beautiful to happen? In today's podcast and post, I'll compare a high view of dating, love, marriage, and sex to the pathetically low view that the world is offering us. Join me now as I challenge our foolish assumptions about dating and love and offer you a path that will make finding your person infinitely easier. Hello, everybody, and thank you so much for coming back to yet another podcast of Beyond Everything Radio. I am your host. My name is Kevin Winder, and I like to serve the world as an online pastor, author, and uncoach, among many other things that I do in the world. I say it every time because it's true. And so, folks, I'm really glad that you are here. If you're one of the young people who have decided to tune in to this series, whoever sent it to you, I want to invite you to subscribe. I would like, if you're one of the two people who listen to this on YouTube or somewhere else, subscribe. Tune in, get the newsletter. Once my website issues get solved, I've been having a lot of technical issues with my website. Maybe if you've been there, you realize that. I'd love to have you sign up for the newsletter. I'm going to start some different kinds of communication there, and I'd love for you to be a part of it. And also this content, subscribing either to the newsletter, to the podcast on your favorite podcast provider, will give you an opportunity to kind of reconnect. You know, like I say, this isn't entertainment. This is really going to give you tools and resources, train you in the way of wisdom, and prepare you for life, a good life, a fulfilling life, a meaningful life. So I hope you'll consider that. And for the rest of you, thank you so much for being here for the last however many years, 10 years of podcasts and 13 years of blog and newsletter. I'm glad anybody even shows up and gives me their time, and I'm always grateful when you tune in. And so, folks, this is part 6 of this series, The Way for Young Adults. Today's title is called Awakening to Love. We're going to jump right into it. It's probably going to be a little bit longer than the usual one. The word count is a few hundred words higher. But I really felt like I needed to fit into this podcast the content that is here. And before I get started, I would like to say that there's so much more behind this. And if you want to discuss it, you can reach out and we can talk. I am not so famous that I can't engage with you. You can just reach out through my website once it's fixed, and I'll connect with you. I would love to hear your story and discuss some of the nuances of this, your challenges, and I hope this helps you. This is going to be something very, very different, okay? So tune in. This is Awakening to Love, and it's part 6 of our Way of Young Adults series, and it's podcast number 504. And so, folks, if we're going to talk about love, finding your person, we have to kind of put it in a little bit of a framework, okay? So the statistics about marriage, they don't look good. And for decades, our society's divorce rate has been at least 50% or somewhere around there, plus or minus a few percentage points. But what they never tell you is that the divorce rate for Christian people who build their marriage on biblical principles is somewhere around 27%. And in some denominations, it's as low as 19%. Now, that's really important, right? Because it's saying that for people who uphold biblical wisdom, the divorce rate is half of what the rest of the world is facing. Okay? That old adage that the divorce rate is just as high in the church as it is in the world is not true. Okay. But it's not even the divorce rate that's really so concerning. I mean, I think that kind of weighs on your mind a little bit. But the real issue is the percentage of people now that are getting married is at a historic low of only 46% of Americans are even opting, considering, thinking about, open to marriage, which is down from nearly 80% in 1949. So think about that. I mean, it used to be that, like, I'm a Generation X, you know, I'll be 56 this year. And when I got out of college, almost all of my friends were married before they were 25. Almost all. I mean, I don't know how many weddings I went to people who were 22, 23, 24. And that is a trend. Now my daughter is going to be 22 and she's getting married in a couple months. And people are like, oh my gosh, that's so young. And while it may be, you have to understand what's behind it. And so I'm going to share with you how I've trained my children to think about these things. And I hope that this really helps you. But this trend of avoiding marriage is indicating a foolishness, because it's saying, well, if you don't get married, you don't get any of those problems like divorce and all that other stuff. You can just leave when it gets bad. You get a get out of jail free card. So try and get all the benefits of marriage somehow without actually giving a commitment, laying down your life. You see, in upstream from the marriage world is the dating world. And this is where many of you find yourself. And that is a world that's even more concerning, if you ask me. Nearly half of all young males are not dating at all. And most of these males are citing career focus, societal changes, and the dating landscape. They don't even want to get into relationships. They've got their computer. They have a cyber doll. I don't know what they're hoping. You know, maybe they're just fearful. I do see that. This younger generation is afraid of just going up and talking to people. Now, the data from dating applications, it reveals that over half of available women are competing for the top 2% of men. And modern women are economically empowered now, and many are unwilling to what they would call date down or settle if a man doesn't fit their criteria. And you can't really blame a woman for that. They basically say, I want Mr. Tall, Dark, and Handsome. Right? But basically, that's the 2% that make a good income, that look really good, that have, you know, all the things, you know, whisper poetry in their ear, whatever it is. Almost all women are looking for that same guy. And so the average American guy is completely overlooked. And the data algorithms on dating apps, it proves this out. Like, so if you've ever been on them, they're usually a disaster. You don't really get good people that align. It's hard to find what you think you're going to find there. Now, if you ask these women, you know, what do they bring to the top 2% of males, right? You start seeing this delusion, which becomes fodder for endless podcasts. Like, I don't know how many videos on Pearl and, you know, some of these other young podcasters. All they do is talk about relationship drama, right? And that's entertaining, but none of that drama is helpful to you. I mean, it's only describing the vast problem, which you know already exists. I mean, if you're one of the 50% of women who are trying to get the top 2%, like, there's part of you that thinks you can pull that guy. And maybe you can. But most of you can't. And what's in it for that guy if he has all these women coming after him all the time? Like, what is his motivation to settle down and focus only on one woman? Like, you can see that there's a cataclysmic collision that's taking place, and it ends in the emotional ruin and the relationship decline. And so if you're a person that has high morals, you know, if you have a person that has high integrity, that truly has family values, you value marriage, dating, you respect that person. You know, I see this, you know, with my young adults. Like, how do you find that other person? It's really, really hard in this world to come and say, I have a high view of marriage and I want to talk about it on the first date. That's like what everybody would say is suicide for your dating life. And so finding your person in today's environment, it can really feel impossible, especially if you have high morals. And you can see why many people are just kind of giving up. I want to tell you, don't give up. And I want to give you some tools that I think can help. Okay, now I can't change all of those dating realities that you're going to face. If you go onto a dating app, I can't restructure the algorithms to be in your favor. I'm sorry. I can't, if you live in a place where there aren't people to meet, if you don't go to a church, a club, you're not involved in a sport, you just sit in your basement and you scroll on your iPad, I can't change the fact that you're not going to meet people other than somewhere through the cybersphere. And that's a recipe for disaster. But what I can help you with, if you'll pay attention, is a strategy that changes you. Like, you have to change how you think about these things and approach them and how you engage with these realities. Like, if you know the dating app reality, then wisdom would say it may just be better to avoid those altogether. If you're uncomfortable introducing yourself to somebody who seems interesting to you, you need to get over yourself and learn how to do that, right? Like, wisdom is going to stretch you a little bit. And so I can change some of these ideals and put you on the right track so that then you will be open to receive. Because the wisdom literature that we've been pulling from, this one, Song of Solomon, says in chapter 2 and chapter 3, the wisdom says, do not stir up or awaken love until it pleases. And what it's saying is, don't force it. If you aren't a person ready for love, don't go after it. Like, if you really don't want a committed marriage, then dating is not a solution for you. And I'm going to say some things today that are really contrary to what you probably grew up with. I'm going to say some things that might sound old-fashioned. They might sound Pollyannish or unrealistic. They might even shock you. Like, I would even have the gall to say such a thing in today's modern world. But I want you to hear them. And you have to realize that the world that we live in lacks wisdom. It has no skill here. And the advice of the world is foolishness. It's folly. And so those who just go along with the pathos of our culture, our schools, whatever psychology says, whatever the internet says, whatever all those unhappily married people say in their 2-minute TikTok videos, if you follow their advice, you will drive your life into a ditch. I promise you. They can't lead you anywhere good because they lack wisdom. And this world that we live in, look at all the TV shows, look at the culture, the dating, all the stuff. It's reflecting huge problems because it has a pathetically low view of dating. It has a low view of love. It has a low view of marriage and an extremely low view of sex. But many of you have grown up with this terribly low view and have never even heard the alternative. Now, I'm going to show you the alternative, and you'll say, well, that's just religious ideology. That's, you know, you're going to hear in your mind an argument against what I'm going to offer you. Okay, so I'm going to share how you can build and hold on to a high view of these sacred relationships, okay? So pay close attention to the suggestions, because you're going to probably, if you haven't really heard these, or if you have heard these but totally disagree with them, that disagreeable part is going to come out. And I want you to explore why you desire what is contrary to high ideals. Why do you disagree with this? Is it because you want something that this doesn't allow? You want to do something that has a low view of love, dating, marriage, or sex? And if you want a low view, you need to own that. You need to discover if your values are actually high or low. If you value something that's, you know, you value it or you don't value it. If you don't value sex, then don't expect to find your person. I'll begin with the underlying philosophy, which the word philosophy means love of wisdom. And then I'm going to offer you just some practical strategies on how to go about this. Okay, so stick in. I think I've got 5 points that are more philosophical. And then I've got a list that I'm going to share with you on how you can go out and do this. So let's jump in. Number one, you have to begin with the right definition of marriage in mind. You see, folks, dating, I believe, has a single purpose of finding the right person, finding the best fit, finding your person. Like, if you're just dating to figure something out or to see what happens, you're already off track. Having a high view of marriage means that learning sacrificial love is a priority for you. And maybe you've never heard that. Maybe you never put those two together, sacrificial love. The kind of love that is you die for the sake of the other person. You see, a marriage is where two individuals die to themselves, and the marriage is a unit of two people giving themselves away to a third thing, the marriage. And the marriage becomes the priority and not the individual. That definition of marriage will comb out the tangles of a lot of your assumptions if you can let it do that. And this is one area that I think religion actually got right. And if a person has no spiritual maturity, a high view of marriage is literally impossible. And just getting married is not the goal. Having a fulfilling, loving marriage, sharing life with another is the goal. Like, marriage is truly fulfilling. I'm going to celebrate 29 years of marriage this year. And it's as good today, it's actually far better today than it was years ago. And I'm not just making that up. We've matured so much. Like, marriage continually evolves. And I'm married to a different woman than I married. And she's married to a different man. And she tells me I get a new husband like every 3 to 5 years because there's this evolution that's happening. It's really fun. You see, but marriage is where each individual dies for the sake of the marriage, not where the marriage exists for the sake of each individual. And I think most people go into this with a definition of marriage. It's like, well, if I finally fall in love, if I finally get connected, if I finally find my person, then I'll somehow want to get married to them. And all of these feelings of love and all this stuff are going to be there. And I'm just going to hope that they stick around for the rest of my life. And you're not sure if they even will. And no wonder you are doubtful about marriage. If you look at marriage like that, you can see why it seems hopeless. You can see why it seems foolish to get married when you're 22. But you see, dating is not for sex. You don't date people so you can have sex. And in fact, our culture now today most people are having sex long before they make a commitment to even start dating. Dating isn't for fun. It's not to just see what happens. It is solely to determine if another person is compatible for life. It's to determine if this other person has the ability to give self-dying sacrificial love as you are committed to self-dying sacrificial love. And I think that's going to scare most people today. If you talk about this on the first date, many will just freak out. But it will become a welcome truth to the person who shares this high value. You run into another person who shares the model of self-dying sacrificial love for the sake of the other, that you know that you will go, your needs will be met, not by competing with your spouse for your needs, but by emptying yourself in service to your spouse. You're going to meet their needs. They are going to meet your needs. This is the biblical model. Ephesians chapter 5 really breaks this out. Paul says you must submit to one another out of reverence for Christ. Husbands, love your wives as Christ loved the church and gave himself up for her. He died. He emptied himself. Right? This is the model of marriage. This is the definition of what you're shooting for. It's a very high, lofty goal. And you might think, well, I don't want to get into a relationship where I'm sacrificially giving myself away to somebody who may not feel that way. And you shouldn't. That would be a disaster. This only works when you have somebody else who shares this high view of marriage. Number two, don't look for someone to make you happy. Look for someone worthy of making happy. See, marriage is, like I said, where we empty ourselves for the sake of the other. So you have to pick someone capable and willing to die to themselves. And this seems hard, but it actually makes dating very easy. What do I mean by that? Well, you see, a high view of marriage only works with two givers and two forgivers, right? As soon as you meet a taker, they're super easy to spot. You can spot them really, really easy. And there needs to be no second date if someone lacks this principle. This means that marriage is among the first conversations. Yeah, imagine that, going on the first phone call before you even go out and see each other, talking about, well, what is your design for dating? What is your view of love? What is your view of marriage? What is your, you know, how do you hold sex? And someone says, oh, I believe sex on the third date at least, so we can try it out, right? You know right there, yeah, I think we're done now. Now, hear this, because this is going to help you in the dating life, not hurt you. This means that folly advises we just defer the conversation of marriage until, well, I don't even want to bring it up. Some people are, they're living with people and they can't even bring up the subject of marriage because it offends their person that they've given their self to, their body, their finances, their everything else. And they're like, we'll never get married. It's like, it's a totally backwards. You have the conversation up front. Do you share a high view of marriage? Yes or no? Well, yes. Okay, then tell me what that means to you. If that means something to you, you'll know immediately. If they don't get it, if they have, don't share it, walk away. You're done. No second date, not even a first date. See, that's where, you know, Philippians, it says, Christ was in the form of God. He didn't count himself equal with God. He didn't count that as a thing to be grasped, but emptied himself, taking the form of a servant. So there's this idea in the Bible of God emptying himself of all the power of God and becoming a servant of all humanity. So there isn't some prideful, big hit ego, I'm in charge, I got the answers, I'm leading this thing, I wear the pants, I'm the man boss, girl boss, whatever it is. I'm at the bottom. You lead from the bottom. You give your life away. And so, like, we can see in Christ a model for this kenosis, this self-emptying. That's the principle. Like, if you don't see it, if you've never been introduced to it, let me just help you to train in that. So that when you date, you're like, that person lacks this idea. They have no concept of it. Move on. It's a disaster if they don't. Okay? Number three, take sex off the table. Okay? The goal of dating is not to have sex. People are not test drives. I hear this all the time. Oh, well, you wouldn't buy a car without test driving it. What car are you going to keep for the rest of your life? Second, a person is not a car. They're not an object. They're not a possession. People are not test drives. Now, let me help you understand something. Yeah, nobody wants to get into a marriage where their sex life is going to be a huge disappointment and you're locked into a marriage with somebody. But if you followed the first two bits of advice, this will, I promise you, not be a problem. A high view of marriage with the principle of self-dying sacrificial love, by definition, means that you will be fully committed to the other person's sexual satisfaction. You will have an entire life to explore and grow sexually together. There's no reason you have to get in bed with each other. If you're horny and can't control yourself, that is a low view of sex. That is a immature person. Okay, you don't just give vent to your sexual appetite. Nothing good will happen. You'll have your entire life to explore sexuality together. And if you both share this mutual desire to serve and please, I promise you, your sexuality will be better than anything you could have on a Tinder hookup. Because those are you taking away. You're taking from a person instead of giving yourself away to a person. So if a person won't date you without sex, if you take sex off the table and they say, well, we're breaking up, then let them go. They have a low view of sex and you should move on. Sex, when it's divorced from the whole life of the person, is a form of dismemberment. Do you understand that? When a person says, I want your vagina, I want your penis, but I don't want your in-law, I don't want your emotional pain, I don't want your debt, I don't want any of the things that come with the periphery of your life. Those don't make me happy, but your body does. What you're doing is you're saying, I'm going to partake in this without taking on the whole life of this other person, and I'm going to just steal the part I want from you and throw away the part I don't want. So is it any wonder that people feel used and abused? Well, you are. And if you sign up for it thinking, well, I'm not going to get emotionally involved, I'm just going to do this because I need a sexual release, or I just want to have fun, or I just want to do whatever, you're a fool. Because there is no scenario where you don't feel robbed from that place. By removing sex from dating, taking it off the table, you avoid unplanned pregnancies, which are usually ended in abortions, the killing of little babies. You avoid sexually transmitted diseases, of which there are many and many and growing, many that cause cancer and death, right? You avoid giving yourself to somebody who won't lay their life down for you, which makes you a fool, which means you lacked wisdom. And so without sex on the table, you actually stand a chance of developing true intimacy, getting to know a person. And then when you are married, sex is the icing on the cake. A friend of mine always says, you know, sex is 10% of a good marriage and 90% of a bad one. And in the book of Proverbs, the voice of folly, literally who we talked about, chapter 9, verses 16 through 8, says, here's this woman tempting a young man. And this is kind of the voice of the world. Whoever is simple, ooh, let him turn in here. Turn into your sex drive. Let him who lacks sense, she says, come here. Stolen water is sweet, and bread eaten in secret is pleasant, she says. But he does not know that the dead are in there, and that her guests are in the depth of Sheol. Like, what you think is just fun, just having a building my body count, making yourself feel like a stud, or feeling a free, independent, sexually liberated woman, you are joining the dead. You're cutting off any future hope of true joy. Get that off the table and build true intimacy first. Okay, number four, get the correct order. You see, a self-dying, loving relationship is always first a friendship. And if you, someone you know, if you like being with a person and if you enjoy them, that's a starting place. Like, we can't love anybody that we don't truly respect. And friendships grow into deeper attraction. When you discover that you share values and goals, like, then that friendship is like, wow, that person really has something there. This is interesting. It makes it interesting, and attraction grows with familiarity. And yes, a physical attraction must be there. If it's not there, don't ignore the fact that it's not there. But I will tell you that physical attraction can and does change over time. You'll go into periods of higher and lower states of attraction. And a high view of marriage just begins with a high view of 1, friendship, 2, dating, 3, love, 4, marriage, and 5, sex. In that order, friendship, dating, love, marriage, sex. Friendship, dating, love, marriage, and sex. Get that order right. By following the order, you're going to avoid painful mistakes that are going to be minimized. You can keep yourself true and pure for the one you will ultimately marry. Like, you might really feel like you have this great connection, but you jump in bed early before you're married, you know, before you really fall in love, before you're really even dating. Like, and it all unfolds, and now you're just, you got a body count. You're going to try and pretend didn't happen. You're going to try and ignore it. And then if you did find somebody who shares that high view, all of a sudden it's like, well, you didn't share it. You're incongruent with another person. Like, you've disqualified yourself. Now, that doesn't mean you can't correct this if you've already kind of blown that. I'm not trying to shame you. Please hear me. But I'm trying to give you the sense that there is a high view of sex, marriage, love, dating, and friendship. And if you have a low view, like the world teaches you, then you're going to feel pain. And this avoids the painful mistakes. So don't recreate a bad order. If you know, now that you know the order, do the order correct. If you're in a relationship and you don't know if you love each other, if you've moved in and there's no talk of marriage, move out. Fix it. Get the order right and establish whether this is true or not. Don't just wait around to hopefully find out. You can know today. That helps you. It's better to know the painful truth than to drag it out forever. This isn't about sexual purity exclusively, but it definitely includes that. This may seem naive in today's foolish world, but the pain of giving yourself away to the wrong person is the price we pay for ignoring this truth. Following those cascades of thinking and emotions that happen after sex with someone you don't die for, that's a mess. This is what it means when the scripture says the sexually immoral person will not inherit the kingdom of God. It's not saying if you have sex before your marriage, you're not going to heaven. That's some Pollyannish puritanical pastor trying to beat you up with the Bible. What he's saying is that when you have intimacy, sexual intimacy with a person who won't lay their life down for you in a committed, loving relationship, you have to do some mental gymnastics, some emotional work to overcome the robbery that has taken over you. And when you minimize it, you begin a callousing effect over your soul, over your person. And you try and create a protective layer and hide. And that hiding and that mental, emotional procedure keeps you out of the presence of God. Okay? Now, think that through. Okay, I know we're getting long, but hang with me. This is the last point, and then I'm going to give you, I think, 10 really quick steps on how to find your love. This last one is number 5, is to build your life together. You see, those committed in high views of marriage will see the wisdom of marrying early rather than postponing marriage until later. Now, the world recommends becoming independent and self-reliant and stable in your career, and then going out and finding someone just like you. Now, how do such people forsake all that they've built among them with their own strength and power and money? How do they forsake that for the sake of the other? Once you've built a little empire of your life, once you really like your job and your income and your apartment and your car and your bills and all the things you spend money on, how do you go and join all of those pieces together with somebody else and then surrender it all for the sake of the other? In fact, you don't. Marriage is reduced to a negotiation, not a union. And this is why most marriages fail. Two independent people can't get along. They don't know. They have to negotiate. Well, if I have to give up my car, then you have to give up that thing. If I get this half of the closet, then you get, I'll have to get rid of my shoes, but then you have to give up, all the Legos or whatever you store. Like, it's a negotiation. And there is negotiating in marriage, but this is different from creating a union. Dying to oneself is easier when you have less to die to. If you don't have a built career and you don't have accumulated debt and you don't have all of that stuff, it's easier to build that life as a unit. A successful marriage is far more likely when two people learn how to grow a shared life together. It's far harder to divorce and separate when you have a shared life. Once you're an empowered, independent person, if the other person doesn't like you, just rip that ripcord off and go your own way. And that's what the whole goal was to protect women from economic hardship if they had to get a divorce. But nowadays, there's nothing to really bond a person. And if you really kind of think through it, just think about the impact on your finances. Everybody's complaining how hard it is to get by. Well, everybody's trying to be single all the way through their 30s. Of course it's hard. You can't pay it. If you have the economies of scale, a couple is far more wealthy and can generate far more wealth than two singles. Not to mention the fact that this trend doubles the amount of housing that we have to have in the marketplace. Because everybody wants to have their own apartment and wants to live on their own, wants to be independent. Right? So now that drives the price of housing up for everybody. This all comes from the same ethos. But think about it. It's easier to grow together starting young than it is to try and merge lives later after you've become hardened. And I know these principles are increasingly harder to find in today's world. I know they exist, though. There are people who do share these values. Generally, you're going to find them in religious environments. You're going to have these biblical moral principles are going to be around those, and they will prevent painful relationship mistakes. They're going to help to quickly screen out those who are not candidates. Dating is to rule out a non-candidate if you get to the dating. Before you get to the dating, you should be learning around whether or not this is a candidate. Not just, are they cute? Following the folly of the world has already proven disastrous, people. So what option do you have? Like, if you're just going to ignore what I'm saying? You're going to ignore the truth, suppress it? Because you just want to be sexually active? You want your Tinder account to be going? You just want those hookups because somehow you've got some other thing going on? Like, What is it? Oh, you don't want to feel like you're losing control. I'm not going to let somebody else have control of my money, my resources, my future, my whatever. And so now you're a commitment phobe. Yeah, we have to trust God in all things. And you have to trust that your person will be made known to you in time. But I can tell you this, if you get the heart right, God will open up a way for you to find the right person. So work on this inside stuff, this philosophical stuff first. Make the change. Make a correction. Do it right. And I believe that once you adopt this high view, you'll gain a clearer line of sight into who you'll even consider dating. I mean, it makes it actually much easier when you can scrape 90% of the candidates off the table in the first 5 minutes. Now, here are the 10 steps to get started. Okay, if you are struggling, where do I go? What do I do? This is it. If you find somebody that you're interested and you can't, you just don't have the ability to go up and speak to them directly. Hi, my name is Kevin. I would like to get to know you. If that seems creeper or weird, like my children tell me, you can't just go up and do that, Dad. And I'm like, well, that's how I always did it when I was young, but we didn't have tech, right? Then start with tech. Use your texting or DM and make a connection. But be very clear and see if this person of interest is willing to explore friendship. Like, so that's step one. Reach out, connect. Step two, be clear. See if they want to explore a friendship and get to know you. This is how you decide if, one, if they're worthy of your interest, and two, if they're worthy of your trust. Number three, begin asking questions which reveal this person's intent, their interests, and their values. Are they worthy of a friendship? Is this person someone you can actually become a friend with? You have to discover this way up front. Okay, number four, begin engaging on the phone or in person. Like, this is, you see how this, we're just now getting to where we're going to see each other and maybe go on a date, a coffee date. Verify the answers you've got. Now, if you were convinced that they have a high view of marriage and dating and love and sex over your text streams, then you begin to interact with them in person and verify the answers. See if they actually really believe it. See if it convinces you when you see it coming out of their own face. Observe their body language. See if it attracts you. You have to explore if attraction exists or not. This is where you discover if they're worthy of your time. Number five, establish a purpose for dating. Establish that you will only focus on one person. I only want to get to know you. I will not get to know others during this process. I am going to fully focus on you as a candidate for dating. This is to determine whether this person is worthy of a commitment. And I know this is foreign in our world today, where you've got 10 people that you're friends with benefits, and you don't have anybody that jumps out. That's because you're not giving yourself away to one person. So that's stupid, okay? Establish if you can focus on one person. Are they worthy of a commitment? Number six, if this all goes well, you can begin a dating relationship, right? This is where you discover, are they worthy of your heart and your affection? You know they're worthy of your friendship. They're worthy of your time. They're worthy of a commitment. They're worthy of your interest and your trust. And now you're going to see if they're worthy of holding your heart. You're going to start to share deeper things. You're going to get to know them at a deeper level. You're going to see if they turn from you or dagger at you, or if they've got issues in your commitment to work through that with them. Number seven is you'd continue to date and experiencing increasing amounts of life together. As you go deeper with a person, you're discovering if they're worthy for continued investment, right? Can I work through a difficult disagreement with this person, or do they blow up and napalm me and then have to apologize later? What are the family dynamics like? What are the things? Are they in a bunch of debt? Do they have a bunch of history? Do they have a bunch of pain? What am I really working on here? Are they worthy of that investment? And number eight, after you work through all those challenges and difficult areas, determine if your relationship is a safe place to heal and grow in friendship and love. Like, you will know once you kind of get a sense of a person and you've given a little bit of your heart away, right? Remember, sex isn't even on the table yet. So you're developing intimacy. But you'll know, is this a safe place to heal and grow? Folks, marriage is a healing journey of both parties dying to themselves and being healed and growing in the dynamic of the relationship. And you'll discover that, but this is where you discover this person worthy of love, worthy of being a safe place to heal and grow, and committed to my healing and my growth in the way that I'm committed to their healing and their growth. After that, it's simply number 9, propose engagement and begin sorting out the logistics of life together. If you determine they're worthy of your love and you're attracted and they're worthy of your time and they're worthy of your friendship and they're worthy of your interest and they're worthy of your trust and all of this, engagement is, you know, they're worthy of your soul. You can give your life to them and you begin planning your wedding. You begin organizing the logistics of how you will do life together, right? And then obviously number 10 is marriage. Are they worthy of your all? Now they're worthy of your body. They have laid down their life for you and they are worthy of you giving every single thing that you are to them. That's how you find your person, by giving your person away. Now, if this seems really foreign to you and you got a lot of questions, again, there's so much more I can say about this. But I'm going to close by simply saying this. If you want to chat, just reach out to me and we'll discuss your situation. I've raised 2 kids. They're now young adults who fully understand and believe and are applying to the best of their ability this high view of love, dating, wisdom, and sex. And I can give you personal examples, and they could even talk to you, perhaps, if you're interested, about what makes this totally different for them and why they wouldn't break from it. Because I can assure you, in the case of my daughter, where she's found a young man who shares all these things, the finding of that is the greatest joy. And it's a joy for a parent and a loved one to see that they share all of these types of things. So I'll close it there. If you have questions, reach out to me, it's support@kevinwinder.com. I'll just give you my email. And I do pray that God will bless you as you contemplate these things.